consultations. There is no sharing of the leadership. Then you have the Presbyterian model. And on a local church level, a Presbyterian model is where there is a presbytery. There is a group of lay elders who run the church, right? So you have a group of elders, the body of elders, and they'll go by different names. But these are the permanent, this group, the presbytery, is the permanent group which provides leadership for the church. And they really oversee the pastor, technically. And in a congregational model, the congregation, it is a democracy, right? So the congregation elects their pastor. And as long as the pastor is in good standing with the congregation, everything is fine. But the congregation ultimately holds the authority. So those are the three basic models. Our Free Methodist model is a modified Episcopal model. We have anointed leaders, right? We saw last night there is an ordination process. We have women and men that we believe have been called by God, confirmed by the church, and we ask those women and men to lead, but it's modified, and I will show you some of the modifications. Let me open a parenthesis. Our book of discipline in chapter, in paragraph 6200, says that local churches are free to find the model that works for them to best accomplish their accomplish our shared expected outcomes. So you may say, yeah, but my church doesn't quite work that way. Well, if it's been properly vetted and approved, that's okay. But they should all be within this basic framework of a modified Episcopal system. We're not going to have a local church which is congregational, nor will we have a local church which is Episcopal in a pure sense, right? We're always going, because we have a Free Methodist way, which includes this collaboration. Probably not a good moment for questions, because I can see it. I can see it on your faces. So let me go a little further, and maybe I will answer some of the questions before you get there ahead of me. The corporate model for corporations, right, in the secular world is you have a board, and the board are elected by shareholders, but the board controls everything, and the board hires the CEO. This is the same model, at least in America, it's the same model for universities. It may be different here, but in our universities as well, there is a board who hires the college president. And then the CEO, in turn, hires his or her staff, and the staff produces whatever they produce, widgets, and much money is made, and everyone is happy. So that's the corporate model. Now, because we are embedded in that world, many people bring the corporate model into the church. I mean, it's just almost reflective, right? And we assume boards run things, because that's the way it happens in university, and it's the way it happens in the world of corporate world. In our model, the leadership flow is a little different. Oops, sorry, I went a little too fast. But there is a pastor who provides leadership for the board, and together then ministry, the society, which is our name for church, that's the Methodist name for the congregation, then the society does ministry, and the society elects the board, right? So in your local church, you have some kind of board. Traditionally in the Free Methodist Church, it was called the official board. In more recent years, they're typically called the local board of administration. You may have another name for it, leadership team, whatever. I'm not concerned about the name, but my point is the society selects that board. But the society does not select the pastor, right? This is why it's not a congregational system. We listen to the society, and you have a ministerial board who will contact a delegate, or a delegate is always free to contact the ministerial board. But you can see this is not a corporate model, right? This is a pretty radical departure from the corporate model, which is fine. and everyone's happy. That's a picture. I took that picture in your church. That's I did. That's how happy your people are. Just a couple of quotes from our manual. So about the local administrative board, it says the local board of administration shall work in partnership with the senior pastor to provide vision, general oversight, planning, and coordination of the ministries of the church. And E in that same paragraph says the pastor, in partnership with the board, is responsible for making provision to accomplish the mission of the church, including Christian ed, et cetera, et cetera. So there is a partnership envisioned here. We do ask the pastor on a local church setting to provide leadership. On a conference level, we ask the NLT to provide leadership. And we look for boards to partner with them. And on a general church level, we have a board of administration that we ask our bishops to work in partnership with. But we ask bishops to lead. We ask the NLT to lead. We ask pastors to lead. Now you, according to your style, you may lead very collaboratively. In fact, your church may not even recognize that you're leading sometimes. I mean, there are leaders who are very collaborative. And it almost feels like a group is leading. But that pastor may just be very clever. Okay, so that's the administrative board. Now, on the conference level, we have an NLT who leads basically we have two boards. We have an admin board and a ministerial board. We ask the NLT to lead on both of those boards. And then leadership is provided for the churches and pastors, and the feedback loop here is that the annual conference, which is the churches and the pastors, elects the boards. We did that this morning, and we elect the NLT. But once we elect our leaders, we are not to be in opposition to them. I mean, this is just kind of a principle of submission to spiritual authority. On the local church level, we ask pastors to lead. So if you're on a local church board, it's okay to say, Pastor, you know, I have some questions about this. We don't ask a board to be a rubber stamp. Do you use that term? You know, to just kind of routinely say whatever. No, we ask you to actively engage in partnership. But if you find yourself routinely in opposition, something's funny, because this is the God-anointed pastor who's over you, right? And the church in its wisdom, or, you know, the church makes mistakes, obviously, you know that. But, you know, we appoint pastors there, and if you find yourself routinely with concerns and grumbling, there's an issue there that needs to be dealt with. It may be your pastor, or it may be you. Right, but that's not the way it should work. You should find yourself typically in assent and in affirmation of your pastor's leadership. Let me pause there, because you may be. This is the hard part, isn't it? Is knowing so, like, how much dissent is okay in our political system. In your political system, let me say, you have the idea of the loyal opposition. And that loyal opposition can be very vocal. Well, that's not the church model. We're not looking for loyal opposition. Right? This is the body of Christ. And it's not like, oh, this hand is in opposition. You know, that's not loyal opposition. That's just painful. So the model of the body is kind of our model. And it has the head, who is Christ, right? And then we're all working together, each one with our various gifts. But any clarifying questions or comments at this point? Yes, please.
Yes, just thinking more directly on that, is it more appropriate within the leadership team discussion to raise concerns, issues, even strongly, provided that we reach that consensus at some point, and so to speak, do commit to the direction of the government. But I think it is important that we can feel that we've got genuine concern.
Yeah. 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 No, so I've had a lot of bad ideas as a leader. And thankfully, there have been people around me who have said, have you thought about this? Or, you know, so there certainly is. That's why we do this. That's why we have boards to partner with. So the question is, how is it done? And how often is it done? So I work with in one of my conferences, there is a particular person. She is a woman. And whenever she raises her hand, I know it is going to be critical. She simply never supports. She only has one pedal, and it's the brake pedal. You know, so that's the kind of thing I want us to be kind of sensitive to. You just keep track of that. And a good leader will have given you those opportunities probably before you get to a board meeting. I mean, this is the way I work, at least. I don't want surprises at a board meeting. I want to talk with people. I want them to know where we're going. I want them to know my heart. That doesn't mean to say it's all done, you know, by the time you get there, but I want to make sure there's been ample opportunity for concerns to have been vetted so that at the end of the board meeting, we are moving together on the same path. That's my goal. But yes, yeah, the question is are concerns valid to be raised? Yes, certainly. Yeah. Yeah, please. So the end result, of course, is the smiley face, yeah. So you get the election cycle. We don't ask you to evaluate superintendents, or in this case, the NLT, but once every 4 years. So while the leaders are in office, this is why it's a modified episcopal system, because it's not automatic. You're aware probably that many churches who have bishops, the bishops are for life. It's called indelible. It's an ordination. Bishops are indelibly ordained for life. This is the way most churches work if they use bishops. And the Free Methodist Church has had a certain history of ambivalence about whether they should be bishops or general superintendents. So we kind of have a modified thing where we have men called bishops, but they're not for life, right? So in 2015, the church will decide whether or not I continue to serve as a bishop, because I'm not ordained bishop. I am ordained as an elder. So it's a modified system. On the annual conference level, just a couple of notes about what superintendents do. In our case, we call them the national leadership team. The conference superintendent is responsible to look after the spiritual and temporal interests of the church and have general oversight of the work in his or her area, and to promote and oversee the development of specific strategies. So these are, and you can look at all the others, but I thought those were the two most pertinent in terms of leadership. So when we talk about leadership, what are we talking about? We're talking about overseeing the church and developing strategies for the church. So it's not just vision, right? A vision is what you can see in the future, which is important, but it's also how you get to the future. To be an ex officio member of all boards and committees, and you have a standing role that also includes your secretary, treasurer, and somebody else as ex officio of all boards and committees. Ex officio means with vote and voice. Then the admin board on the annual conference level. Each annual conference shall have a standing administrative committee, not less than 4 members, giving due regard to clergy lay balance. It shall act as the standing administrative committee of the conference in the interim between annual conference sessions to care for routine items and items specifically delegated it to by the conference. And then B, the administrative committee shall give strategic planning attention to such ministries as. So you can see, in some ways, the NLT and the admin board, not in some ways, in all ways, really have to work closely together. But we're looking for the leadership from the NLT, and we're looking for the administrative component. I mean, hence the title, right? Administrative component. We're not looking for both to lead. That will not work. I was a part of the national church when there was a phase when the bishops were really, I think, challenged by the administrative board in terms of leadership, and it was not pretty. I mean, there was a phase when I don't know if you were ever there, Alan, during those years, but it was awkward. The administrative board thought they were charged with running the church, and the bishops thought they were charged with running the church. And it was just in 2007 when the matter was settled, and they, I'll tell you how it was settled, but so on the national level, I'm sorry, on the general church level, the general conference selects bishops and the board of administration. The bishops are charged with leading, the board of admin is charged with administering, superintendents are charged with leading conferences, and then conferences elect the general conference delegates. So that's very quick, but I need to keep moving, and everyone has a smiley face. So the bishops, our job is to lead in word, sacrament, and order. Those are typical descriptions of bishops. To cast the vision and inspire its leaders. And we provide primary pastoral care, leadership for the denomination with ecclesiastical authority to lead and direct the church and develop and articulate the purpose, vision, values, and expected outcomes of the church. The reason I'm mentioning this even is because this, you can kind of see parallels on your national level and on your local level. So this same kind of language is our model. And then the General Conference Board of Administration is responsible for policy. So when we talk about administrative, what are we talking about? We're talking about policy, procedures, finance, and legal issues. That's really the remit. Do you say that, the remit? That's the responsibility of the admin board, those kind of issues. On your local church level, you know, this on the conference level, on the national level. Let me see what... Yeah, so just kind of in closing, and we really are in a bit of a time crunch, but John, you will continue after me, I believe. But I do want to have a few moments for conversation. So it's modified episcopate. It's episcopal. We are episcopal because leaders are charged with setting the vision and have ecclesial authority. And boards are charged with the implementation administrative side. It's modified. It's not really an episcopate because the church elects the leaders. I mean, I was not named by Bishop Snyder as his replacement. You know, the church said they voted. So in an episcopate, that doesn't happen. I mean, bishops, I already mentioned this, are not indelibly ordained. The laity are empowered in implementation, and there are many points of shared ownership between the board and the leader, whether it be the pastor, the NLT, or the bishops. Those are the three levels. Okay, that's all. I just kind of wanted to lay out the groundwork and help me now see where, you know, what this questions this might have provoked. Ed.
As part of our charity board, we have trustees.
Yes.
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 What happens if, say, I decide I want to do something that is against what the trustees need to do according to English law? How do we sort it?
So the question is, and it would be the same way in the States. We also have trustees who hold actual title to the properties. Is that here?
Yes.
The trustees actually are responsible. Do you want to rephrase the question just very clearly?
English trustees, at least, are responsible for making sure that the charity fulfills all the things the charity is supposed to fulfill.
Yeah.
In its entirety. Yeah.
But they would not be. These would not be things regarding vision and strategy. These are just technical matters of ownership, right?
No, the English charities set out the objectives of the charity, so they're clearly laid out.
Yes, right.
And then the trustees are supposed to make sure that they're fulfilled and they're not.
So, for instance, say a pastor says, we need to sell this property and move downtown, and the trustees say no. Is that kind of the scenario you're wondering about?
Yes, I suppose so, because most of them are regional in their application. Most of the FM trusts are anyway, yes.
Yeah. Well, if I were a pastor, I would not propose something which I did not feel I could lead the church to get to. So we have a case here where the temporal, the state is requiring that the trustees who hold the deed make those decisions. So as a pastor, you would not be wise to lead in a direction you don't feel you can take your trustees. So you may come to a point where you say, and this happens regularly, where a pastor says, I think we are on different paths. And then the pastor goes to the NLT and says, I'd like to be considered for appointment elsewhere. I am not able to take these folks where I think they should go, or they're not willing to go there, and I have lost the ability to lead, or they have not granted me the ability to lead. So from a pastor's perspective, I would say that. Now, I would say if you're on the board that's saying no, these can be spiritual matters. And a lot of it comes down to ecclesiology, to what we think the church is for, who it's for, what it's there for. And sometimes we have to do a lot of work in terms of the spiritual leaders, lay and ordained. We have to do a lot of work about what are we here for as a church. You know, and if this pastor who I've suggested has this idea of going to the city center and beginning another kind of ministry, you know, maybe he or she is not recognizing the ministry that's there, but maybe the folks there are not recognizing that, hey, we're in a dying church and we've got to do something different, or we're going to be dead in 12 years. You know, so there does need to be, it has to be done in partnership in that case. I don't know if that helps much, but
can I
yeah. Yes, please, David.
What happens if an NLT who have been appointed to give leadership?
There's the microphone.
Right. Let's move up a level.
Yeah.
What happens if the NLT that have been appointed
yes.
to give leadership are not violating trust law, but are bringing in spiritual direction?
Yes.
And their administration board won't go along with it. Who then, in a sense, calls the tune?
Well, it's fairly routine for a superintendent, or in this case, the NLT, to have strong leaders on a board who, I mean, that's the reason they're there, right? Is because the church has recognized these people have good leadership. Being a strong leader does not necessarily make you a good follower. And this is where we can get into trouble. So you elect very strong leaders to serve on the boards. These are, and this is just universal. This is not just here in the UK. I mean, both you and I have seen this in multiple places. So, and we see this on university. I sit on other kinds of non-church boards as well, and you see the exact same thing. So we elect very strong leaders on boards, but they may not be used to knowing how to say yes and. Which is the key thing. Yes, and. So how do you contribute to the vision without putting your foot on the brake? I think, again, I would go back. If you find yourself in routine opposition to leadership, you need to have a long talk. And if you can't get along with the leader, then you need to step down. Because the church has affirmed that leader. And if you find yourself in opposition to that, I think you are on dangerous spiritual ground. Even if the leader is wrong. Right? The leaders are routinely wrong. I mean, you know that, right? Because you're leaders. We are routinely wrong. Hopefully it's not 50%. Hopefully it's a little less than 50% that we're wrong. But But spiritual submission is a principle which God honors even when the leader's wrong. And I would be very concerned, I guess. Put myself in the position of a board member who is routinely in opposition, I'd be concerned, because I think it's a matter of spiritual submission, and I think God rewards submission, and you'll see this on a local level, you see it on a national level, as well as on an international level. So I think I obliquely at least address the question. Some questions one addresses obliquely. Please.
With regards to the bishops, when you became a bishop, who nominated you? Was there a groundswell of wheel of, you know, Bishop Roller, potentially? Or, I mean, did the lay people just say, oh, he's a great guy, let's put his name forward? Or were you suggested? I mean, how does that process
work? Yeah, that's
work?
A good question. There really is a process. I just want to say something in fun. So my new campaign slogan is... My new campaign slogan is, you could perhaps do worse than Roller. I think it's strong. Does that feel... Yeah. Okay, so there actually is a process. Annual conferences, and this annual conference included, is you are entitled to nominate candidates for bishopric. And then those go to a bishop's nominating committee, which is formed every 4 years. And that committee, which the bishops do not sit on, nominate people. So in my case, there were 10 people being nominated in addition to two or three sitting bishops. Sitting bishops are always renominated if they choose to. So I am choosing to, so I will be renominated in 2015. But our requirements are that there be at least two additional candidates to the sitting bishops. So we have three sitting bishops. If we all agree to stand again, there will be a total of at least five, and that's how it is. And then it's just simply put to the vote. There are no speeches. There's no campaigning. We have a very non-political system, which I'm grateful for. Yeah. Okay, so this is just a primer, if you will. You said primer? A primer. This is just a primer, if you will, kind of on our system. And it's good every few years just to go over. This is our system. It's a modified Episcopal system. Leaders are elected. They then are empowered to serve, and then boards are working in partnership with them. I think that's in a nutshell. Good? We're on the same page? All right. God bless you.